Hi everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fireline, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fireline, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today. Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com. And this morning, I am here with my friend, Ann.
Good morning, Miss Bobby.
Good morning. And I am also here with someone who hasn't been on the calls before, the recordings before. I'm here with Reva. And Reva is a forest fire chief for the U.S. Forest Service in Oregon. And Reva?
Hey, everybody. Good morning.
And thanks for being here.
Yeah.
John couldn't be here this week, so you'll all miss John. But this week's story, you know, I was going through a list of different possibilities, and I got in the mood to tell some different stories of things that happened at the World Trade Center after the attacks on September 11th. That's a somber, I have some pretty somber stories from that, but I'm going to tell you some stories today that I hope you laugh at. If you don't laugh at these stories, then you'll think I'm a horrible person because I'm cussing like crazy in these stories. And the F-bombs are going to be flying because you can't tell the stories about New York, especially these stories, without using the F-bomb. I don't say it just because, you know, I'm crude. I'm saying the F-bomb in these stories because that was the style of the communications that of the people around me. And if nothing, I am adaptable.
Right,
I adapted very quickly to that. I didn't ever use the F-bomb before I went to New York City. I came back dropping them like crazy. So I'm going to tell you a couple stories that I think are kind of funny. So the first little one was I had been working, as you, in some of the stories you might remember, I was in charge of supplying logistical support and supplies to half of the World Trade Center site, Ground Zero. You know, we had kind of divided up. So I was Church Street Sector. They weren't using ICS in the pure form at that point. New York still wasn't quite up to speed on ICS, Incident Command System. Now it's a national incident management system. It's a requirement. Everybody uses it. But back then, it was Church Street Sector, and I was the supply for that area. And I had built that... I had built that little supply building right there on the corner, on the street, on the corner of Ground Zero. And so I had never been to New York, and I was not used to New York accents and their vernacular, their colorful vernacular, where every other word was the F-bomb. F in this and F in that, and I was like, gosh, that's kind of crude. Gosh, I would never say that. And I wouldn't at the time, but they wore me down. Excuse me. They wore me down, and so I realized sometimes that I had to use that same language. Now, one of the things about working in New York at this time, you know, I don't remember how many firefighters they had on the department, like 40,000 or something. There were like 11 women on the department at that time. And so here I am. I come in. So I'm at the level of like one of their battalion chiefs. You know, I'd have been on that same kind of level. But they don't know who I am. They called us the tree people because our badges, you know, Forest Service badge has a tree on it.
And were you not wearing collar brass at the time?
I was not wearing collar brass. I was wearing like a hoodie because it was cold, and I was dirty and, you know, so I wasn't wearing a uniform. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, I had a brush jacket, Nomex jacket, you know, a fire jacket on, that sort of thing. But anyway, so I'm in this little area, and I had been called honey and sweetie about 14,000 times, and I was getting pretty sick of being called honey and sweetie by these 25-year-old firefighters. And so I was kind of at the end of my tolerance level, and this young kid comes in. Now, prepare yourself. I'm going to use the F-bomb. This young kid comes into my work area. Hey, sweetie, you got a hoodie? Or I don't remember what he was asking for. Sweetie, honey, you got this? You got that? And I had had it. I had had it. And I'd been listening to them dropping the F-bombs for the last couple weeks. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Don't fucking come back until you can speak to me with respect. I don't want to fucking see your face. And I went on the F-bomb rant. And this kid is looking at me like, what?
Does his eyes get big?
I said, do you talk to your battalion chief that way? Until you can come back speak to me with respect, don't fucking come back. And his eyes are like saucers. He's like, oh my God, you know, this lady's gone crazy. And he leaves and he walks away. Well, as he walks through the door to go out, who's standing by the door who had just come in and listened to my explosive rant, F-bomb filled rant, but the incident commander for the team that I was on and the national fire director for the U.S. Forest Service, the big cheese for us all. And they're standing there. And when the guy walked out the door, I could finally, my eyes could focus, you know, because, you know, when they see about seeing red because you're so mad. Yeah, I was seeing red, and that haze cleared up, and I see the national fire director looking at me, and he's got this grin on his face that he couldn't possibly say, hey, that was really fun to watch, you know.
No.
He enjoyed it, though.
But you didn't know who it was.
I didn't know who it was. And then my incident commander says, Bobby, let me introduce you to the National Forest Service Fire Director. And I was like, oh, hi.
Oh, no.
I was like, there goes my career. But the reality was, that was the first time I'd met him, and I ended up having a long professional career with him, and he was so supportive of me. I think he saw that I could stand up for myself.
Right.
Maybe inappropriately so. But anyway, so that really was my introduction to him, and it turned out to be a great relationship with him for another 15 years or more. Mm-hmm. So that was the first incident of losing it in New York with the F-bombs.
Now let me ask you this.
Okay, so Bobby, here's the big question.
Yes.
Did that guy get his hoodie?
He came back.
Did he run away before?
Oh no, he didn't get it. He didn't get anything that day. He wasn't gonna get the dust off my shoes that day. He came back later. And there was someone else working in there with me. And he's looking at me, and he's looking at this other guy. And this other guy who witnessed that whole thing, he was like, hey, don't look at me, buddy. You know the thing? You could talk to her. And he looks at me, may I please have... He says, Chief, may I please have something or other? And I said, yes. Thank you very much. And he says, then as he's getting... He's walking out, he says... And just so you know, sometimes I do call my battalion chief honey. It's like, you liar, get out of here.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So,
but you know what? That's a good point where it illustrates that you got his attention.
Yeah.
And I bet he told other people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, there was a guy that I knew, from a online firefighter chat room. And I had gotten to be pretty good friends with him. And he was a captain on the fire department in New York. And we were when I knew I was coming, I let him know. Of course, he had two kids on the job. He didn't know if both of them had made it out. They both did, you know. And so we didn't know how we were going to see. This is before texting, I guess. We didn't know how we were going to catch up when we got there. So I had been there for maybe 10 days. And he walks into my work area and he said, "I knew it had to be you. My guys came back and said, there's some bitch running that place down there." He says, "I knew it had to be you."
He knew how to find you.
He knew how to find me. And so, but, you know, you had to hold your own with those guys. But I got so used to listening to these guys talk with their New York accent. So I just started talking like them, you know. "Hey, yo, you know, where you from? You got, you know," and so I was like, "Yeah," and I talk like that back, you know, and I, like the Vinnie Barbarino talk, you know, I don't know how, what accent is what, but I just, you know, you hear that, and so you start talking like, "Yeah, I know what you mean. I got one of those things so back here, yeah." And this guy says, "Where you from? You sound like you're from Jersey." And I said, "Yeah, I'm from Jersey." And he says, "No, you're not really. Where are you from?" And I finally quit talking with my accent, and I said, "I'm from Washington State." He says, "Scopa, but that's an Italian name." I said, "Yeah, I'm Italian." He said, "There's no Italians in Washington State." It's like, I don't know what to tell you,
you're
buddy.
Like, there's at least one.
Yeah, I'm here, so maybe there's none in there now. So, anyway, you know, it was kind of good. You know, the guy joked around. We kind of built a little rapport. And, because, you know, in that kind of environment, you kind of got to be able to give it back to them. You know, mm-hmm. They're going to walk all over you if you don't stand your ground. Now, another thing that happened was, I had been there now for maybe 3 weeks. I was getting tired. I was getting tired of the long hours. I was getting tired of breathing the dust day after day. I was getting tired of the New York attitude. Because, you know, New York's a different place. And every day, you had to kind of stand up for yourself. And this one particular day, I was going to let this division chief that was running the church sector, that 2 days before the other division chief had ordered like a rebar cutter, because they were, you know, trying to get through the concrete and they needed a rebar cutter. So I ordered it through logistics, and I got it. So I went over to tell him, "Hey, your rebar cutter's here." Now, because of the way they were organized, he didn't know that an order had been put in for a rebar cutter. So it was early in the morning. I walk over to his little area, which is maybe 200 yards away from mine. I said, "Hey, Chief, I want to let you know the rebar cutter came in. So anytime you guys want to send some of your guys down, I got the rebar cutter at the supply hut." He says to me, what do you got, honey? You guys got coffee and donuts down there?" And I was so, so sick of this.
You were over it.
I was over it. And I was about, you know, wrapping things up, you know. And I was like, I was speaking New York. I was speaking full-fledged New York. I said, "Oh, fuck you." And he looks at me like, and he like looks up from his paper. What? What's the matter? I said, "I'm your supply for your sector. And your predecessor ordered a rebar cutter. And I'm just telling you, it's here. If you don't want it, I don't give a shit. I'll give it to someone else." "No, wait. Now, who are you?" I said, "Did you look at your IAP? Now, IAP, we all know, is an incident action plan. And at that time, you know, let's keep in mind that they were under great emotional duress because of what had happened. But they hadn't been using ICS. And so he didn't even know what an IAP was. And on his desk was an IAP. And I walk over and it's the, you know, multi-page daily plan of what's going to happen. So I grabbed his IAP and I said, look, it's right here. And I turned to his division, his sector, as they called it. He was a division chief. But I turned to his sector and I pulled down the page. Here, right here, church sector supply. That's me. And I point down the street. That's where I'm at. And your predecessor 2 days ago ordered this. If you don't want it, I don't give a shit. I'm giving it to someone else. And I walked away. And he was like, oh, wait. Let me come down there and see what's going on. He just didn't know.
Yeah.
And so he followed me down, and he sees everything that's going on. And the fact that, I mean, I'm sorry to say, the fact that I said, F you, and was blowing him off, all of a sudden it got his attention, and he became an ally, and we worked together great.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the way it should be.
No.
It's not the way it should have to be. But I can tell you that you have to adapt your communication style to those folks around you.
Mm-hmm.
Before we started recording, Viva and I were talking about, excuse me, Riva. I have a friend that's Viva.
I know, you got close. That's all that matters.
Riva and I were talking about being on a forest fire and, you know, dealing with some gruff personalities. And, you know, on these stories, you've heard me talking about some gruff personalities. And we were saying, imagine talking to a hotshot superintendent when they're giving you some shit and you're their supervisor.
Yeah.
You're their supervisor and they're giving you some crap and you would say, if you were following all the training we've been given, you know, when you speak to me in that tone, it makes me feel less valued as a member of our team, and I really would wish you would speak to me more respectfully. Well, that is not going to...
That's the worst thing you can do.
That's the worst thing you can do. And so...
They're going to eat you for lunch.
They're going to eat you for lunch, and what you sometimes need to do is use their communication style. And in New York, the communication style was the F-bomb. And being tough. And standing up for yourself. And... going to their style.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say going...
When in Rome,
yeah. And that's how you can be successful. Now, as I have often said on these stories, you don't go talk to the congressional delegation and say, well, let me tell you how it's going to be around here. It's effing this and it's effing that. You know? Know your audience. That's right.
Ooh.
But when you're in that environment, it was kind of like, if you guys remember the story about the bumper. Hey, you got a nice bumper. It's that same thing. I'm dealing with a bunch of logging guys who were, you know, their natural environment was heavy equipment, greasy coveralls, and...
Bumper envy.
And they had bumper envy. And I had the best bumper that fire. And so you know your audience and communicate using their communication style. And so I don't want to make light of what we would consider inappropriate language. But sometimes you got to get people's attention. And you got to be really judicious with that stuff. You can't go dropping F-bombs. Often you can't do that. You gotta be in the right environment, thankfully it's not very often that you just gotta end up using that as much as some people would want to. You might want to drop the F-bomb. It's like senator. No, never mind. I think that's kind of what the point I was trying to make out of all this. There's some humor in it, you know. I'm dropping the F-bomb in front of the National Fire Director for the agency, you know, that thankfully he was a smart guy and he got it and it didn't hurt me. I think that's kind of the essence of the story. And Viva,
we talked about like just different cultures. So that, you know, that's kind of it's a New York culture, right? It's that culture.
Right.
And we've talked about, you know, when you go to the southeastern United States, you got to learn to talk differently. Can't talk as fast. You can't be given direct orders. You
right.
You know, and it's getting experience of working in different areas and getting those nuances and then figuring out the best way to communicate and trying to get, like you said, get the style that is on their expectations so the communication can go better.
You know, when we were talking about this, I mentioned when I've been on incidents in the South, I was called Miss Bobby all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Bobby, we were thinking about this, or what do you think, Miss Bobby? And unlike the New Yorkers calling me honey and sweetie, it was an entirely different thing. You might think, well, that seems inappropriate, but as Reva said, that's a sign of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not be used to it, and I wasn't used to it, but I realized that they were being very respectful.
Right.
So that's an example of
what you're saying. And you figure out the intent of of how it's used. Right?
Yeah. Anne, what do you think?
Well, it was a little different for me in the corporate environment because, you know, that terminology wasn't used a whole lot. And
that would have been
great.
And
when it was, I mean, it was a real extreme case.
Yeah.
So, it was a little different.
You were speaking corporate.
Well, I was in courtrooms and, you know, different kinds of things and with the media.
Yeah.
Had to be careful. Yeah.
You could, what's the guy's Scaramucci? You could be in like a Scaramucci in front of the media and start dropping the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Lose your job after 10 days.
Yeah. I don't think it would have gone over well with the client.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this kind of wraps up.
When I wish could have talked like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I really never had used the F-bomb. I was never cussed like that. And then I went to New York. That was the first time.
Uh-huh.
And I realize now that I can use it when I need to.
Yeah.
But hopefully I don't need to use it anymore. Not in those situations anymore. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank everyone for listening. We are approaching 100,000 downloads now.
That's awesome.
We're over 90,000. I don't remember where we are exactly. I have to add up. So I'll ask you folks to share the website with your friends if you think they would find it interesting, entertaining. You could use it as an example of what not to do. Whatever works. and just share it. It's kind of fun to see people from all over the world. This is what surprises me. People from all over the world listening to these stories. So that's kind of cool. And with that, folks, I'm going to sign off, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks very much.